Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast. This is episode number 13. Today, we'll be talking about Tesla beats delivery expectations, Audi e-tron S debuts, Xpeng delivers first P7. I'm Dominic Chioni, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, multiple EV owner and Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, we have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. He also puts together super awesome videos for the new Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Lots to talk about, but before we get to the big news, what do we have charging up in our driveways this week? Now, I guess this week's a little bit different. Tom, you've been sort of renting a car of sorts. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I actually have a couple things going on. I just picked up a 2019 BMW i3S. And I'm going to do range and charging tests on that, but I haven't done anything with that yet. I just picked it up. What I did do a range test on was a brand new 2020 Tesla Model Y dual motor long range. A friend of mine, local person that has Toro vehicles available, he rents out Teslas, just got in his first Model Y. So I had told him, as soon as you get one, let me know. I want to take it for a day to do some range testing, which I did yesterday. It was a really great day for it. And we haven't even posted this on Inside EVs yet. So we'll give the podcast listeners a little advance. I was able to drive it 275 miles. And get a consumption rating of 260 watt hours per mile, which converts to about 3.85 miles per kilowatt hour. For our European friends, that's about 16.1 kilowatt hour for 100 kilometers. So it's a fairly efficient vehicle, the third best efficiency that we've tested behind the Model 3 and the Hyundai Ioniq. Really cool vehicle. I liked it a lot. As many of you know, I'm a Model 3 owner, so I was at home inside the cabin. It's basically a Model 3 that's just bigger. It's got a ton of interior space, beautiful full glass roof, which was really nice. It's a big Model 3. It drove great, handled really well for a crossover. But there's a couple things I have to note. Went over the vehicle when I first got it, and as we've come to accept, the early Tesla builds aren't great, and the panels weren't too bad. There were some things that I personally want fixed if it were my vehicle, but then there were a couple other things that were unacceptable. There was under the front passenger side wheel well. There was a wiring harness that was just hanging out and dragging on the ground. I had to tuck it underneath and tape it so I wouldn't damage it. I'm not sure what it's for, but that's how the vehicle was when I got it. And the person just took possession of it 5 days earlier. So that was a little disappointing. As I was driving the vehicle, I was getting in and out of it to shoot some videos. When I closed the passenger side front door, the speaker fell off. The speaker that's in the front corner of the window, it just fell off. And I had to grab it and snap it back into place. So that was another thing that was a little disappointing. And then as I was taking pictures in the back of the back seats, I noticed that on the driver's side rear door panel, the plastic padding had a nice tear in it. And I quickly called my friend, just to make sure he was aware of this. I don't want him to think that I did this with my equipment while I was taking pictures or videos. And he said, he saw that the car was delivered that way and he made note of it already. So, those were some pretty disturbing things on a brand new car. And then to make matters worse, we don't have pictures of this, but the rear hatch doesn't close properly. It has an automatic rear closing hatch, the Model Y, and every time it closed down, the top of the hatch would bang the top of the rear tail light, It actually has the plastic is chipped now, and it kind of closes one side and then the other side and then pulls itself closed. So these are some pretty significant things that should have been caught in quality control. I don't know if Tesla's doing quality control now, because for those major things to get through, a wiring harness dragging on the ground, the speaker not being properly attached, and the rear hatch not closing properly, to the point where now the rear taillight's going to have to be replaced because it's cracking it when it closes down on it. It's unfortunate. We talked a little bit about Tesla having the lowest initial quality in a recent survey in our last podcast, and that we're not making that up, and neither are the people that collected that data. That said, people love their Teslas. They still have the highest customer satisfaction. I still love my Model 3, but when we see this stuff, we have to report on it. I wasn't intending on reporting on Tesla quality. I rented it just so I could do the 70 mile an hour highway range test, which I did. And as I said, we finished up with 275 miles, 100%. I drove it down to zero and was able to use 72 kilowatt hours were available, which is what you would expect on the new Model Y. But when you see things that are this egregious, you just have to report on them.
But shouldn't that, this might be stating the obvious, isn't there something that should be plugged into?
I suppose, Martin.
Like, it's bad enough that it's hanging out, but where's it meant to be?
I had the car for a day. I rented it, and I didn't want to take too much time figuring things out. So, like I said, I took my taped it and tucked it in underneath and told my friend, hey, this better get fixed. Maybe it has something to do in the front headlight area. It didn't seem to affect the drivability of the car, but that needs to get looked at.
That's more than an ABS sensor or a brake pad. That's quite a chunky.
I think that's for the little speaker in the front for the noisemaker.
Oh, the noisemaker. Well, in that case,
the area it would be
that's
in.
The right area.
Okay. Good point. And it should have a noisemaker though, right?
They do now.
Some came installed and some were forgot to be put in, is what I understand.
Oh, you've seen this before?
I didn't hear anything. So
none of them are turned on in Model Y.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. None of them are turned on, but some Model Ys have the actual speaker and some don't.
I see.
Well, maybe that's why it's hanging out. It doesn't have anything to plug into.
Right. It was just dangling around. Right.
Not a good day for speakers.
Man.
That's right.
But it's Tesla really needs to step up their quality control coming out of the factory. You charge this much money for a car, and I would expect everything buttoned down, like perfect. 50 grand, I want perfection, basically. And that's not it.
You're not going to get that with Tesla.
They'll make it good, though. I mean, we should point out, they'll always make it good.
You always have to go for one service visit after taking delivery of your car. I've had to do it with every Tesla I've had, every Tesla my parents have had. You get the car, you make note over the week, and then you drop it off. You drive their loaner car on a big road trip, and then you get your car back.
Right. Other car companies have these kind of issues too, maybe, but I don't think to this extent. This just seems like, I don't know.
Depends on the car.
The thing
about it is the mistakes are so egregious that, as I mentioned earlier, it appears as though there's no QC department. Like when the cars roll off the assembly line, they just roll directly onto carriers and ship out. And then, as Kyle said, they say, okay, if anybody has a problem, we'll fix it later. And they do. So, I don't know, maybe that's the new norm. Maybe that's how the cars are going to be made now. We're just not used to that. I certainly am not. But as I mentioned earlier, I still love my Model 3. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But it's definitely strange that, we get this many defects on brand new cars.
Hey, Tom, so going back to your range test, was that 70 miles an hour? And what is the EPA range on that?
Yeah, so it's EPA range rated at 316 miles per charge.
Okay.
And yes, at 70 miles an hour, Kyle and I have been trying to do the 70 mile range tests on every vehicle that Inside EVs gets on loan so that we can compile a comparative chart and, you know, just give readers something, another metric to look at. Like we both openly say this isn't the greatest way to test range. It's just one more piece of data for people to look at. If you're driving down the highway at 70 miles an hour, this is about what you can expect to get under the conditions we had. And one thing that I note in the video when it's posted is what I was a little surprised about, I shouldn't have been, was that I'm so used to leaving my Model 3's fan setting at like 3, and it pretty much does, even when it's super hot out, it keeps the cabin cool. But the Y is so much bigger. It has so much more space. I had to have it up to the fan level setting 5. It was a warm day yesterday. It was over 90 degrees. So I'm sure that robbed a decent amount of range where I was just pumping that cold air the whole time. So, you know, I would imagine if there was no air conditioning going, you know, I might have gotten 285 miles of range. But as it is, at a constant 70 miles an hour, under the conditions I drove yesterday, we did 275 miles, 100 to 0.
Right on. What size tires did that have?
It had the standard 19-inch tires with the new, I forget, what are they called again? Kyle probably knows, the new
Gemini or something like that.
What's that?
Gemini Aero covers.
Yeah, the Gemini Aero covers, yeah, which I really like. They look cool.
Gemini Aero covers. Oh, I think I've seen those.
Yeah, they're just the new stock wheels.
Right, but they're not on the 3, just the Y, right?
3, Y and Model S, not 3.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I would prefer having those over the stock, because I have the stock 18-inch wheels on my 3, and I take them off. I don't like them at all. If these were the covers on mine, I would definitely leave them on. I think they look nice.
Yeah, they look pretty nifty. I saw a Model S on them the other day, and it looked pretty good. And that was obviously one of the new 400-mile Raven cars, which is pretty cool.
Sweet. Hey, so Kyle, so you have you don't necessarily have a car yourself this week, but you do have a big trip coming up that you want to tell us about?
Right. I just canceled my press rotation because of this trip. So they picked up the car. It wasn't an EV. It was a Kia Seltos. Nothing exciting. They picked that up just yesterday, 2 days ago. But back to Tom's point about Model Y, I spent the day with Model Y yesterday as well. My friend Brian from i1 Tesla came up and we were drifting it around the racetrack and doing a whole bunch of silly stuff as we always do. But we took the back seats out of the car, which was kind of interesting, and they had a lot more connections than Model 3. So we couldn't quite figure out what that was all about. You can see him dismantling all of the wires there. We also did a range test on this car the day he took delivery of it, but we were not able to do the proper way of driving it down to 0. I had to extrapolate with data, but I figured about a 74 kilowatt hour usable, and I've noticed Teslas, when they're fresh, drive a little bit past 0. So Tom, I think you may have been able to get a little bit more, not that any reasonable person would have done that. I think that no one will do range tests better than our method of running it down to 0%. That's the only true way to measure capacity in a range. So when I did mine for out of spec, I think I estimated 272, 274 miles on the performance version, which is crazy because those 21-inch wheels seem to be more efficient than the 20-inch wheels, which is kind of interesting. Not than the 19s, but not sure what's up with that. I thought that was kind of interesting. Also, the 20-inch wheels you can't tow as much on with Model Y. I believe Steven had a story up or was working on one on that. Anyway, right, so we have no EVs in our driveway other than the ones that we own, and we're taking the Model 3 performance on a 1 or 2 month or 3 month or however long we go excursion around the country, and we will be overlanding with the vehicle, so we're going to be camping and living out of the car. We'll have a really nice tent. We'll bring the dogs with us. We're going to go to, you know, Glacier National Park, Yellowstone, Grand Teton, the Salt Flats, Moab, the Grand Canyon, all the stuff that you got to see living in America. Alyssa's never been to any of these places. I'm fortunate where I've done every state now, except Alaska. That'll be the next road trip. So it's going to be a really cool trip. We are planning anywhere between 10 and 15,000 miles. we're just going to take it easy, no rush, charge at campgrounds, maybe run out of charge a couple times. It'll be kind of fun. We're going to document the whole thing in a like an overlanding excursion series on our YouTube channel for Out of Spec Motoring. And then we'll highlight the really interesting things on the Inside EVs channel. So, for example, we'll do efficiency testing with the roof rack that we got. Yakima is giving us a really nice roof rack for the trip. So we're going to do it mounted forwards. And then I've heard if you mount a roof box backwards, it gets better efficiency on Model 3. So we're going to have to test that as well.
Nice. 3 months, 4 months. I had no idea that you were going to do it for that long. That's a heck of a
trip. Right. So the basic plan is it's at least going to take us a month and likely 6 weeks. And so while we're out there, you know, we're going to do this Polestar drive. So I need to leave for that. But basically Pikes Peak in Colorado is the last weekend in August, I believe. And since we're already going to be out there, and I'm going to go out and film videos for the Pikes Peak team for the Inside EVs YouTube channel and other things, watching it go up, I figured Sweet. We may as well just stay out there. You know, I work remotely, so it's not like we necessarily need to be home.
So you're going to be at Pikes Peak this year. I'm so jealous. Oh, man.
Right. There's no spectators allowed, unfortunately, but we'll be with the team filming and stuff like that. So
there'll be media, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's potential. I'm not quite sure our in yet, but we'll have some sort of in. We'll keep it safe with people. I think it's a smart decision to keep it spectator free. Sure. One, it's extremely dangerous for spectators from vehicles being hurled at the crowd. And also just the general virus situation doesn't seem to be getting better. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Our trip, you know, obviously we're going to take as many precautions as possible. And one of those is camping in the middle of nowhere. We are going to be not in city centers. We're going to North Dakota. No one even lives in North Dakota. We'll be totally fine.
Right. And you can mask up when you go into stores or whatever.
Right. Of course, you know, we'll have all of our precautions. I mean, the thing that we think about is we live at a destination spot here in North Carolina. Everyone traveling up and down I-95 will stop here, and whatever virus they have, they're bringing right into our front door, right? Basically, this restaurant across the street. So we're going to go away from everyone is our idea.
So it should be interesting in the next few podcasts to see exactly where you are. We track your podcast.
Right. Well, that might be interesting. I mean, I imagine, obviously, we're going to plan on Fridays to be in places with good Wi-Fi so that we can do our show. It may or may not happen where we're just not going to have the service. Obviously, sure. We'll have our phones. We'll try and stream. We'll go to McDonald's, whatever we can find that has good Wi-Fi. But if I miss a show, I really apologize. But we're planning to have Wi-Fi every Friday for this.
Right on. So before we move on to news, Tom, I just wanted to ask you if you wanted to give your friends Tesla Turo business a plug. Do you know how people can get a hold of him and in what area he services?
Well, he's in Jersey City, New Jersey. And I'm going to have all the details on the post that I post about the range test, links and everything to go there. But if you just jump on Turo in the Jersey City area and look up Teslas, he's got 13 cars there. His name of his out. He has a company. It's called Plug and Charge. Okay. And he actually has a website. I think it's just plugandcharge.com. But all the vehicles get rented through Turo, and you can get any model of Tesla pretty much except a Roadster that you want if you want to check the car out, see if you want to buy one or just use it for the day.
That's a pretty cool business idea. Is that the only like large Tesla Turo business that you know of?
I'm sure there's plenty of them out there. The only one that I know of, especially the only one local here in California, Turo is huge, much bigger than in some of the other areas, but here in New Jersey, he's the only one that I know of renting Teslas, at least.
Wow.
Right. I was in California, and you could see like one guy had probably a similar setup, probably 10 or 15 of them that he rents. I don't actually think his was through Turo, but I think his was a private business. But yeah, pretty cool stuff. There's one last thing I'd like to just mention really quick before we go to the news, sure. Which is talking about the Cannonball Records for electric cars. You know, it's something that is a run that goes from New York to LA, or in some cases, LA to New York. The traditional route is New York to LA. It's 2,850 miles from the Red Ball Garage in Manhattan on East 31st Street to the Portofino Hotel and Marina in Redondo Beach, California. And this is basically a run that's just, you know, it was in the 70s and 80s to protest speed limits. It's here's how fast we can get across the country. And since then, it's turned into a lot of solo or small teams that blast across the country. And in recent years, it's turned into showcasing electric vehicle long distance capabilities, not necessarily driving 170, 180 miles an hour like a lot of the gas cars are blasting, but a lot of showcasing charging infrastructure and managing your time and speed. It's more of a giant math calculation that's pretty fun. And it's probably a more attainable cannonball, right? So this is the Hooniverse folks that did it in their Audi e-tron on the screen. That was a press car they ran it in. I love that. so cool. And just last night, there was another attempt to break the current record. And unfortunately, Kyle, they did not come in.
Can I interrupt for a second? So
sure.
In case our viewers don't know, and Kyle's very humble about this, but he is actually the current cannonball record holder. And what's right. Your time?
It's myself and Matthew Davis set the time literally a year ago, July 31st last year. We did it the 28th and 29th. It was 45 hours, 16 minutes in a Model 3 long range rear wheel drive that we had lowered and prepared specifically for this type of drive. So I won't say who the team was. They haven't come public, but there was an attempt. There's been many attempts. I think there's been almost 10 attempts, but these guys definitely came the closest, but we're not able to break the record. But I want to say congratulations to them on a nice drive, and also safety of the drive. There has never been a major accident involving another vehicle on a cannonball style event in history, which shows, you know, I'm glad they were able to keep that record there. You know, what's crazy is this type of drive really does feel like a very safe kind of driving, because you're constantly paying attention. You have a co-driver with you. You're monitoring the road. There's a lot of deliberate moves. You're not just driving around aimlessly at 140 miles an hour. And just big congratulations to the team. It's a huge challenge going across the country in a time like this. I mean, we've done it, and it was, you know, the gas cars, they're down to 25 hours and something, which is amazing. But 25 hours is a day. The electric cars is 2 days of driving, right? So it's really, you're battling that sleep problem a lot. So,
right.
Yep. Big congrats to that team for completing successfully and safely.
Wow. You can catnap when you're supercharging?
Our average charging time on our run was 12 minutes.
Oh, geez.
So it's park the car, pee, maybe you have time to grab some beef jerky, which is the official food of Cannonball, and you're back on the road blasting.
Man, 45 hours. That's so you don't really sleep during that time. That's crazy.
I was able to take probably a 1 hour nap while Matthew drove for one leg in Oklahoma in the middle of the first night. But other than that, we were awake the entire time.
And so say I want to assemble a team and beat your record, would I have to speed in order to do that?
Oh, absolutely. There is the last run to really factor in and to maybe adhere a little bit to legal limits was Lars Thompson, a good friend of mine, family from Switzerland, who had purchased a Model 3 brand new in New Jersey. He was like, you know, it was a 2017 or early 18 when they first came out. He had shipped it to Switzerland, drove it all around Europe. And when they finally brought the Model 3 to Europe with the CCS charging port, he had shipped this car back to the US, did a cannonball with his whole family, which was really great. And I did my run just a couple weeks after his, but he was the last one to really stick to the speed limits. And before that, Alex Roy held the record. And so it's a really cool lineage, but it's amazing. We've seen zero progress in long distance travel with EVs in 1 year. Version 3 superchargers, there's only two along the route, which this new team were able to take advantage of. But again, two isn't really going to make that much of a difference over 26 charging stops.
I think the new Model S Raven should be able to do it better though, right?
I don't know. I actually don't think so. You'd obviously get initial on the first charge.
Right.
You would get more range. But once it's dead, which the majority of it is, how quickly can you get you know, 150 kilowatt sustained in, and then you balance that with the vehicle's efficiency. Keep in mind, in the car we did it in, it was slammed on the ground. That thing would do 240 watt hour per mile at like 90 miles an hour. And so if you're cruising at 110, 120, you're not even above 300 or just slightly above. It's very impressive.
Wow.
Tom, I have some advice. If you are going to attempt it, don't use your spark.
Right. Yeah, definitely not.
I think it's a great little car, but you probably don't want to try to set a cannonball with it.
Yeah.
Icon has a fighting chance for sure.
Maybe it's Icon.
Yeah, I've run the numbers. It's very close. It just comes down to, will Electrify America charging stations plug and charge quickly? Because that seems to be the biggest risk with the Taycan. You have 270 kilowatt peak charging. It tapers, you know, let's say you can get to 50, 60% charge, still pulling 150 kilowatt, which is very good. But at high speeds and, you know, the Taycan isn't as efficient as Model 3. And you have this issue where you have to activate the Electrify America stations, which still plug and charge is not rolled out. So once plug and charge with VIN recognition rolls out and I have a Taycan on my hands, I think it would make sense to at least see what it could do. But I, of course, have no plans to go and break my record.
Right. Okay. Well, let's dive into some news here before the hour is gone. So I guess the big news of the week is Tesla. Their Q2 2020 production deliveries were 90,650 vehicles, which was way above expectations. And that's despite, you know, ramp up problems. I think they had some supply issues at some point. And despite the COVID, they suspended manufacturing at Fremont, I think to some extent for like a month. But they surpassed expectations and delivered all those vehicles, maybe with or without a QC check. This gave the stock a boost. It closed up $89.03 yesterday at $1,208.66. That's pretty crazy. Earlier this week, a Musk memo leaked out indicated there's a chance that Tesla could make a profit for Q2. And the price, which had been around $960 a share, has been creeping up and had also passed $1,000 per share earlier. And that means that Tesla's market capitalization is now higher than that of Exxon, which is, I thought, kind of symbolic. You know, Exxon's actually lost a lot of value this year. But, you know, their energy companies, you know, are not the future. And electric vehicle manufacturers, apparently, according to the market, are. And they also passed the market capitalization of Toyota, which was the largest, you know, the most valuable automaker out there. And I guess you could still, it's still the most valuable automaker out there. They produce millions of vehicles, but by market cap, Tesla has exceeded that. So that was pretty interesting. What do you have some thoughts about this, Martin?
Yeah. And if people are watching, not to patronize anyone, but if they're wondering why they made 82,000 and delivered 90,000, that's because they ended the previous quarter with a ton of inventory. And so they were dipping into their inventory on that. As we saw last quarter, they are now batching together the S and the X and the 3 and the Y. So they made about 76,000 threes and Ys in the quarter. Really, really impressive when it was closed for 7 weeks at Fremont. Of course, Shanghai came to the rescue. And if it hadn't been for the Chinese facility being up and running, it would have been a terrible quarter for Tesla. But in comparison, when you look at that 76,000 3 and Y and you look at 6,300 S and X being made, it's just a reminder that that the S and the X, they are much smaller scale, you know, obviously much more expensive and not a huge part of the Tesla story anymore, even if they are, you know, incredible cars. Obviously, we have to point out they did so much better than was expected. Consensus was at something like 70, in terms of the deliveries, about 72,000, I think, was the consensus from the experts. People get paid to be knowledgeable about this. All of the experts were saying 72,000. I think on Inside EVs, by last week, we were saying that is way, way too low from all the things that were coming out. So to deliver 90,650 is just an incredible job. It's an improvement on this time last year, which is fantastic when you again consider it was their main home was closed for 7 weeks during the first half of the year. It's also proof as well, and this is just the ongoing story about electric vehicles, not just Tesla, but EVs everywhere. And it's always worth pointing out because, you know, that anti-EV story does creep into the media sometimes. And just we've, you know, always got to remind ourselves about this fact. They sell every car they can make. That's like that is apart from, you know, inventory. Yes and no, it's a tiny percentage. If Tesla can make a car, they can sell it. And I've, you know, even when the Model Y first went on sale, we saw those stories of questioning the demand, which I just found crazy. Did the special offers help them make a bit more money because Elon's been tweeting about profitability? Well, they did have that offer on inventory cars getting free lifetime supercharging and some special offers on full self-driving and things like that. As I say, Shanghai was huge, and a potential of the guidance for the year was 500,000 cars from Tesla. And then when COVID hit, everyone thought, well, that's just not going to happen anymore. But actually, China is ramping up 3 and Y very soon. Model Y is ramping up in China, and it looks like 500,000 cars is still on the cards for this year. An amazing success story for Tesla, for electric vehicles, as you say, the tide turning against those kind of old fossil companies as well. A really, really good week for Tesla. And, Elon following that up with a letter of congratulations to the staff as well. So that was my take on it. I was really, really impressed.
Elon was doing some victory laps on Twitter yesterday as well, besides his congratulations.
I didn't want to mention SEC.
Right. He was taunting short sellers with the promise to produce a fabulous short shorts in radiant red satin with gold trim. And he had the little a naughty SEC tweet as well. Y'all can look that up for yourselves and figure that one out. It's a little cryptic, but you'll probably get it.
Not that cryptic.
Probably not. I figured it out. But anyway, so sticking with Tesla, they've also scaled back their Berlin Gigafactory. It's a little less giga than it was originally planned, it seems like. New planning documents were sent to authorities that reveal a building height that was reduced by 29 feet. That's like 9 meters or more than a third. The plan also no longer includes battery assembly facilities and plastic components. So, like as we discussed a few weeks ago, Elon took a trip to the UK and rumors were flying about building a gigafactory there. And I believe we agreed amongst ourselves that it was more likely to be a battery factory and not for vehicles specifically. And now it looks like that may be the case. Have you heard any more about that, Martin?
Not too far away from me. I'm southwest in a county called Dorset, and as the crow flies, it's all country lanes to get to Bristol. But as the crow flies, it's not far away, and that is where Elon is said to have visited. There is some land there which has been allocated, and the smart money. Obviously, the speculation when you talk about Tesla coming to a country, are they going to build a gigafactory? I would say no, because making a car is basically, you know, a big jigsaw puzzle with lots of different parts. Now, all those parts come from, if you're building a car over here, Europe, and we're about to close our borders, or at least Brexit at the end of the year. You just wouldn't make a big investment not knowing, and all those agreements haven't been made. So you don't know what the borders are going to look like. And it could be frictionless, or actually a lorry being held up for 4 or 6 hours at the border for checks just destroys your just-in-time production process. I can't see him making cars here. Actually, what is more likely is using some engineering talent that we have in this country for things like battery production and battery production for cars as well. All you're doing is exporting then over to Berlin Gigafactory, but also a grid level storage as well, much more likely. And I'm surprised it's not happening because the site at Berlin is so huge.
Right.
But just perhaps it's one of those things. They got a stellar deal. You know, the UK government is on a massive charm offensive. Clearly we have upset Europe by voting to leave. And so the Americans are our new best friends again. We always were. And so massive charm offensive looking rather than that way. We're looking that way across the Atlantic at our big brother to come and help us out with maybe some deals. So that is the most likely thing at the moment.
Right. I saw someone trying to tease some details about it from Elon on Twitter. And all he had to say about it was that the US and the UK should have a free trade agreement. So it does seem like he's keen on having some sort of, you know, business set up going there. And they are hard up for batteries. We published a story that just this morning on Inside EVs that LG Chem is going to produce Tesla batteries in South Korea this year as demand grows. And we don't know if that's for, I would imagine that's for storage, right? Kyle, are you familiar with this? Did you see this yet?
No, I honestly, I'm not up to speed on their plans on how to use the LG Chem battery. So I'm not totally sure.
Right. Tom?
Yeah, unfortunately, I read over the article briefly also, and there wasn't a whole lot of meat in there. But, you know, I like Kyle, I'm not fully up to speed on that one, unfortunately. I wish I could comment more on it. You know, it kind of makes sense. But, you know, I don't have too much more to say about it. Sorry about that. We should have talked about this before we doled out the assignments.
I mean,
but as always, I bet you if you go to Martin, he'll know about it because he's in touch with like everything. Okay, I'm putting you on the spot now, Martin.
All I will say is that Elon has repeatedly said on the investor calls that they are battery constrained. And because of the relationship with Panasonic was so long and so exclusive and so harmonious and so tight as well, like investing in Sparks, Nevada, that whenever they started to broaden their suppliers, first it was CATL and now with LG Chem and making their own cells, as we'll find out at Battery Day in September, that it raises eyebrows. But it's very normal for a car company to have multiple suppliers working to the same specs. I don't think this is anything more than that, just them trying to solve an upcoming battery a cell squeeze.
Right. I think they have a lot of energy products as well as their, you know, increase automotive supply. And with LG Chem, they already produce batteries for Tesla in China, in Nanjing, I believe. I guess that probably supplies Tesla vehicles there as well as the Cattle is also a supplier in China to Tesla.
Yeah, and a lot of new buildings going up at Shanghai as well. The, you know, the busiest places at Tesla factories are the drones above them. So we watch these YouTube videos all the time, and there are some big, big buildings going up at Shanghai that weren't on the original roadmap. And so the smart money says it's just cell production or battery production from the cells they get shipped in, or again, a joint partnership like they had with Panasonic. So it just points towards them just needing to source from as many places as they can to achieve all these things. You know, we haven't even got into Roadsters having 200 kilowatt hour battery packs, although that is always described by Elon as the dessert, so it's years away. But okay, so then say Cybertruck and say Semi. You know, these are going to be so hungry for batteries.
Yeah, it's going to really have to turn that up to 11 battery production. Yeah, the Cybertruck that comes with a 200 kilowatt hour pack as well. I can't remember.
And
definitely the next Model S. What do they call the super fast version, the tri-motor version?
The Plaid version?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so Plaid mode. All those things are being put into, you know, into place now. Even if you want to get really nerdy about this, they even changed their software architecture sort of programming this week as well to ready for that. So they went from 10-bit to 11-bit, which means nothing apart from going from 1024, which is 102.4 kilowatt hours, to 2048, so 204.8 kilowatt hours. The maximum, but they were limited with the maximum size of the battery they could put in simply because of their own software infrastructure. So all these little things, it came out this week, and all these little things are just pointing towards soon an announcement on some much bigger battery pack sizes, even like, you know, in Plaid.
They need to. And, you know, it's the correct timing. They always stay nice and quiet at the end of the quarter. They let things settle down so that when they launch something new, the people who just took delivery don't riot, because they've done that a few times in the past. And that was always a pain, especially while I was working at Tesla. And then, you know, I imagine in 4 to 6 weeks, we'll see something kind of cool. At least I hope.
You worked at Tesla?
Yep, for years. I did sales and out of the East Coast side over here. And yep.
Every day I learn something totally new about you. You're like this international man of mystery and like, yeah.
Absolutely not. Yeah, to the Tesla thing, you know, a lot of times we would have to deal with buyers that would say, you know, should I buy a Tesla now or should I buy a Tesla in 2 months or, right. you know, and it's just like, well, on one hand, when you buy a Tesla now, you're getting the best technology they've put in the line. On the other hand, tomorrow they could launch unicorn mode and it flies to your destination, right? And right. by the way, you're not going to get a refund. And oh, by the way, you're stuck with your car. So you kind of just have to take a guess.
Unicorn mode, I like that. If they should have glitter come out of the vents.
That's right. Oh gosh, how awful would that be?
But kids would love it.
It's not about any technology. You could always wait another 6 months and get a better cell phone, a better laptop. You know, the Teslas are more tech than car anymore. So, you know, we're already making those decisions in our everyday lives with everything we buy. It's just that the car is such a bigger purchase that you have for a longer period of time that you want to make sure that, okay, if I buy this right now, tomorrow, there isn't going to be one that's better. Unfortunately, with Tesla, they just keep getting better. I mean, fortunately and unfortunately for those trying to decide exactly when to buy, it's almost like buying a stock, you know, when do I put that money down? You know, should I right now or wait a week or wait till the end of the quarter? That's, you know, that's always been that way with Tesla. And, you know, there's always going to be a better one in 6 months.
Yeah, but you got the perfect timing on your car, Tom.
I did.
In terms of autopilot pricing and everything else, the options layout, you got right in at the right time.
No, I have to admit I did. I'm a little disappointed that I missed out on the new New Jersey rebates, though, because now the state of New Jersey has a $5,000 rebate, which nice. I would have, you know, been able to get, like, if I were to buy a new model.
For a Model Y.
Yeah, if I were to say trade my 3 in for a Y, I could get a $5,000 state rebate. So, you know, but other than that, you're right. I actually lucked out and picked it at a pretty good time.
Nice. So we should move on to another bit of news. So XPeng, I think I pronounced that right, starts customer deliveries of its P7 long range sports sedan, and I believe it's like 428 miles, but that's on the NEDC cycle, which is extremely optimistic. So, Tom, what do you think this would get EPA range?
So, yeah, it's 438 miles on the NEDC range rating, but we have a good metric to go by. It's actually it's rated at 24 miles more than the long range Model 3. It is the longest range electric vehicle, longest rated range electric vehicle available in China right now. So you could take the Tesla Model 3 long range and add on, if it's 24 miles NEDC, add on say 12 to 15 miles. And that's what you can expect, you know, probably somewhere around 330, 340 miles, somewhere in that range rating, if it were EPA range rated. Now, I was at the Guangzhou Motor Show last year when XPeng revealed this vehicle and got to see it up close. Beautiful car, kind of slots in between the Model 3 and Model S size-wise, but it's priced to be comparable to the Model 3. It actually starts at $32,000. And goes up to $50,000. That's post subsidies. So it's actually very good value. XPeng is like a value brand in China, but not cheap value. Like as far as you get a lot for what you pay. Whereas NIO, for instance, is more of a luxury brand. And NIO's vehicles are priced much higher than XPeng. The P7 is a very important car for XPeng. It's their second vehicle. The first vehicle they came out with 2 years ago was the G3, was a compact SUV. And that was made by Heima Automotive, which is a subsidiary of FAW, which is a state-owned automotive company. Now, in China, it's difficult to get a manufacturing license. Not everybody can get one. You first have to prove that you're a competent company and that you make quality vehicles. It's a long process. But XPeng just got their own manufacturing license and opened up a brand new state-of-the-art factory, and that's where the P7 is being made. That's a huge deal in China that this new car company, it's only been out a couple of years, actually has their own manufacturing license, is making their own cars now. And that, like I said, that's not to be underrated. The P7 has an 81 kilowatt hour battery. It's going to launch with level 3 driving capability. And I'm going to hopefully get an opportunity to drive one at the end of this month. XPeng is exporting 3 of them to the U.S. They just secured a license to drive and road test the vehicle in the U.S. And I was talking with XPeng about this. And as soon as it comes over, they actually told me I was going to be either the first or one of the first people in the country to drive the new P7. So I'm looking forward to that, to writing a thorough driving review of it myself.
Wow, that's awesome. And so do they have plans to come to the U.S.? I think they're going to Europe for sure, right?
I don't know if it's for sure. I know that they've already brought some there some G3s to Norway for people to do some media drives and test drives. And I believe that they're going to bring to export them. Martin might know that a little bit, but I haven't been following the European deal with XPeng. But I believe that is the plan if it isn't secured yet.
I see. So the G3 was what Bjorn had a little while back.
Yes.
This is
SUV, which I drove in when I was in China.
So do you think they'll bring it to the U.S., the P7?
If they're going to bring a vehicle, it would probably be the P7. And I don't know. If they do, it's not going to be for a while, because there's a good demand for this vehicle in China. And they're just opening up the new factory. They're just ramping that up. The factory can make 100,000 cars a year. They had 15,000 pre-orders for the P7. And they just began delivering them, something like June 28th or something like that, a couple days ago.
It's definitely brandy.
Like, I think 150 of them in the month of June. And I saw, the funny thing is, I saw there was a Tesla fan website that posted that the P7 flopped in its first month of deliveries. XPeng only delivered like 155 of them. Well, it's because they started delivering them on the last day of the month, or the second to the last day of the month.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of noise out there sometimes, signal to noise about different cars from different fan bases. But yeah. It looks like the XPeng might be one to keep our eyes on for a while as it relates to how it competes with both NIO and Tesla in its home market in China.
In my opinion, absolutely. Right. I got a factory tour, their headquarters tour when I went over there. I drove in the vehicle, met a lot of the company managers. They seem to really have it together and have a very good chance of having some staying power, XPeng, as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot of startup EV companies in China right now. XPeng is one of the ones that I think seems like they have very secure funding. They have their own factory now, as I said, which,
that's a big deal.
Don't realize how important that is, because of course they have their own factory. All car companies have their own factory, right? Well, that's not how it works in China. NIO, for instance, doesn't make their own cars. They want to eventually, but XPeng kind of came out of nowhere, and within 2 years of selling vehicles, they have their own factory. And that bodes well for this company.
Right. Well, skipping down our list of stories real quickly to hit, we should mention that one company that isn't going to be the next Tesla in China is Byton. They've suspended their operations and furloughed employees, and the future is uncertain. Tom, you wrote about this.
Yeah, so I have, and maybe you shouldn't listen exactly to everything I've said about XPeng, because Byton was one of the companies that I kind of was talking up a couple of years ago when I got to meet all the company executives, and I really thought that they had a very good chance of bringing this vehicle to production. You know, they had they assembled a tremendous team. One of the things that I really liked about Byton was they didn't just, they were a Chinese startup. Yes, that's where the funding was, where the money was. But they went out and took executives and, you know, managers and you know, engineers from, they took BMW's, the BMW I, basically their whole top management structure. They brought in dozens of people from Tesla, from Apple, from Google, you know, from Mercedes, from Toyota. They brought in people from all these industry, super experienced industry experts. So, you know, that gave me confidence that, look, these people knew what they were doing. You know, the crazy thing is the M-Byte that you see there in the picture, that SUV, that's like ready for production. I drove it at CES in Las Vegas in January, and they even have, and they're one of the other companies that got their own manufacturing license. One of the few companies that got their own manufacturing license. They built out a Nanjing power manufacturing plant. I was there, visited it, walked around, saw the pre-production vehicles there. They already have like 50 pre-production vehicles. They're ready to start selling this car in China in like 6 months. And they ran out of money. And during the coronavirus, they couldn't get anybody to give them a bridge loan or invest in the company. So what happened was they stopped paying their bills.
Right.
And, they're 4 months behind from what we understand on paying employees. And the power was shut off at both their Shanghai and Beijing headquarter offices and the Nanjing production facility. So the power got cut off. They're 4 months behind on paying employees. And they just, you know, kind of abruptly notified all the employees that everyone's being furloughed or laid off. And we need for 6 months, and we need some time to figure this out to see, you know, if we can move forward or how we'll move forward.
Wow. That's unfortunate. But okay. Sad as that is, let's move on to some a little better news. So Audi has bumped up the sportiness of its electric line with 496 horsepower e-tron S and e-tron S Sportback models. These are three motor versions, two motors on the rear axle, one in front, 100 more horsepower, about a second quicker now from 0 to 60, about 4.3, 4.5 seconds, and a 6 mile an hour faster top speed at 130 miles an hour. It also gets some torque vectoring abilities. The bodies are 2 inches wider, but that's just because it has enlarged wheel arches and has new bumpers. The grille is a bit different, and it's going to be unique, I believe, to the S models. It has a little bigger diffuser in the back. It hits European showrooms this fall, starting at 93,800 euros, or around 105,245. I'm choking on that money. Jeez. And then the Sportback, I believe, is 96,050 euros or $107,800. Man, that's a lot of money. Kyle, how did you think?
But it's not a lot of money for the car. I really think it's priced properly. I think if you look at Model X, for example, this is a nicer car to be in. It's a nicer car to drive, no question. You know, if I've spent quite a bit of time in the normal e-tron, this is a better car than the Model X. You know, you have to think about the charging infrastructure separately and things like that. We all know Audi can build a solid product. We know the interiors are going to be amazing. We know the technology is going to be really good. It has three motors. They're the first to come to production with three motors, I believe, for a consumer production electric vehicle. It's going to be pretty fast. We've seen it ripping around the Nürburgring. It looks pretty sporty. And, you know, I tweeted about this too. I think this is going to be the ultimate dog hauler electric car. Now, if only they would make the RS6 wagon electric, I'd be all about that. But I'm really excited about this e-tron S, and I really hope they come out with an RS as well, because there's a lot of potential with this chassis. They definitely nerfed it on the on the 55 Quattro or the 50 as well. You floor it. It doesn't feel that exciting. I think they probably unlocked some stuff with this car. As expected, Audi always comes out with their sporty models a year or two after start of production. So nothing out of the ordinary, very typical Audi. And I think personally, a really enticing package, especially when they're 35 grand used in a couple of years.
But compare that. Okay. So, but compare that to the Mercedes EQC.
They're very different.
How so?
So like the base e-tron would compare to the EQC. The EQC is much more focused on luxury and comfort. And because it's an EQC and not an EQE or EQS, it's still technically their baser model SUV. I mean, it's not supposed to be their luxury trim. The e-tron is fitted with a lot of the stuff that you get on the Q7 and Q8, which is their higher model SUVs. So they're really sort of competing in a little bit of a different category, although they will get compared often. I honestly think that Mercedes EQC is so ugly, I would never drive that. And no, thank you. But just based on styling. But I think the Audi, they have nailed it. They have absolutely nailed it on the e-tron S. And the sad part is no one's going to care, but I will root them and cheer them on.
I was thinking that the acceleration and the speed and performance of the EQC was very similar to that of the e-tron S.
Yeah, it's very possible. I honestly don't know the EQC specs off the top of my head, but Tom has driven the vehicle, and based on my conversations with you, Tom, you had made it seem like it's a much more comfortable, luxurious, like a Mercedes should and traditionally has been. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was able to not drive it, but drive in one. The Mercedes engineer was driving, but we ripped around Red Rock Canyon out in Nevada. Right at like a pre-dawn drive as the sun was coming up. Got some great pictures of the vehicle with the sun rising. But the engineer really was ripping around these turns. I was actually super impressed with how well the vehicle did. I wasn't expecting that from the EQC, and it was a great performer. It absolutely shocked me. It would have, in my opinion, run circles around a regular e-tron. Now the e-tron S, that's a different story. I'd love to get the e-tron S sport back out on your track. Yeah. and see how well that is, or maybe let you drive it and be a passenger.
Let's talk about this Sportback.
Track perfectly.
What do you guys think about, and this is a very German thing, we've seen it with X5, X6, now Cayenne and Cayenne Coupe. Does it make sense to charge more money for a less practical, uglier version of the same car?
More beautiful version, yes.
So you actually think it looks better in Sportback trim?
I like the coupified SUVs. I can't help it. I know that's wrong.
Wow. Zero appeal for me. I'm very surprised.
Yeah. I personally like the Sportback a little better. And that's another vehicle I was able to drive in out at CES. And when they were first announcing it. So I personally like that vehicle better. But I'll be honest with you, when I drove in it, they hadn't announced pricing yet. And I thought that it might be priced a little bit less than the larger e-tron. I perhaps should have looked into how Audi's pricing structure is with their other models. But I was looking at this and saying, wow, maybe if we can get this for like, say, $5,000 less than the larger e-tron, this isn't a bad deal. But then it ended up being more, you know. So but I like the form factor of that better than the e-tron. It had plenty of room inside for me personally. I didn't need the full size e-tron, and it drove better. It handled better. And I like the way it looks better. So, me and Dominic are against you on this one.
That's fine. I that's why we do this show, because everyone has different opinions. Mine are extremely strong towards away from EQC, away from Sportback, and I really love this e-tron S. I think it's going to be a cool car. Three motors. That means torque vectoring on the rear axle. Right. You can send it sideways, do big skids with the dog hanging out the back. It's just going to be the best.
It's funny how Kyle envisions everybody as him.
Right.
This is my biggest problem in life.
know, sliding sideways. No.
Right.
Right. Well, I think they should build a Kyle spec electric car one day that will only fit me, because it's going to be a station wagon with a lot of storage and 1,000 horsepower. It's going to be really stupid.
Yeah. We need some more stupid EVs. The variation of different, you know, kinds of vehicles is still a little limited, you know.
It's boring. We need someone to come out with wings. I guess the Model X does, but like flamboyant, interesting things. We have an entirely new platform to move the car. Right. Let's see more, even though I don't personally like the Cybertruck. I love the creativity. I want to see more of this from other manufacturers.
Right. We did reports this week on an EV fire engine. So I'd quite like to get that on your track as well.
Yeah, that was really cool. It's a plug-in hybrid, I believe.
Right. With a diesel,
What a great idea, because you need instantly, you start that thing up, you're wide open throttle pulling out of the garage. You got to get there. Electric torque is going to be really great. And it gives the engine a chance to catch up. I love the concept.
It's a hybrid, but apparently we don't say how much battery it has, but it does have a lot, I guess, that they don't expect it to use, it's diesel engines very often. So, and it's from Volvo. It's got the Volvo Penta drivetrain in it. And I believe that's a little different from the Volvo cars that we're used to. I think it's a separate company.
They are separate. And even Volvo European trucks are separate from Volvo US, but they still use the same I-Shift transmissions, which are awesome. They're the best trucking transmissions, automatic ones out there. I actually had a chance to recently tour the US Volvo truck plant in Virginia not too long ago, and they are preparing for electrification of trucks here in the US, which is very exciting.
Oh, that's cool. I'd like to get behind some electric trucks. I drove a lot of box trucks, you know, a while back, and you know, I really loved like the big shifting and big wheel and you know, just driving the experience of a big truck. And I'd like to have that mixed with the electrification and actually get some speed-ish a little bit, you know, because when you pull it on the highway, you know, you're going through the gears, it's not fast.
I've never driven a truck. I've been very interested in trying one, but it gave me, I don't know if you guys have seen, but in Las Vegas, you can go to this place. It's a giant open dirt field that's right off the strip, and you can just drive heavy machinery. We should do something where people can come to the track and just drive electric trucks.
That'd be so nice. Wow. Okay, we should move on real quick. We're over the hour, but we wanted to mention that the Toyota RAV4 that everyone's been quite excited about, and for good reason. Its availability is extremely limited in the US and in Japan, I guess. I think Japan is going to be limited to like 300 copies this year, something like crazy. And in the US for 2020, it looks like it's going to be only available in ZEV states, and which is like 10 of the states, California, I can't even think of them off the top of my head, and only 5,000 units. Maybe next year we might have as many as 20,000. I think that's still a little squishy, that number. But 5,000 is, man, there's going to be a lot more demand than that for it, I think.
That 300 number is monthly, by the way, in Japan.
Oh, is it? Okay, right. Yeah,
Come on, it's Toyota. They're making millions, tens of millions of cars, and then they'll make 300 of these, and of course they'll get to the end and say, "Well, we didn't sell many of them, so nobody wants to buy a plug-in car. We told you so all along. You should have listened to us and bought the fuel cell cars that we haven't invented yet, but they are the future. No, buy a soft hybrid instead, not one of our plug-in cars." Very frustrating. We have been so complimentary about this car on this podcast, rightfully so. 18 kilowatt hour battery, 16 usable probably, but four-wheel drive, great utility, great price, well put together. Fantastic. They could have sold a ton of these in the US, but no, they're not going to make many of them. Immensely frustrating, enormously. I mean, I mentioned supply constrained EVs at the beginning of this podcast with Tesla, but this is just taking the biscuit. It's just the most ridiculous for a company the size of Toyota. It's spare change down the back of the sofa from them. It's a rounding error. Like, oh, did we make some of those? Oh, okay. No. It's nothing. It's nothing for Toyota.
it's pretty disappointing, actually, that they're not being a lot more ambitious about this. And it's not even going to come to Europe. I think in Europe, you're going to get the Suzuki Across, which was another story we had, which is the RAV4, but with a little bit different grille and a few other touches. You know about that too, Martin, right?
Yeah, I was going to say badge engineered RAV4 coming here at Suzuki, but it's got a different grille and a couple of other things. But they won't sell that as a Toyota here. They'll sell it as a Suzuki Across. No, Suzuki, a brand with, you know, heritage, doesn't mean anything. I don't know how many are sold here every year. It's not going to be a lot. I would have sold it as a Toyota, and but maybe they will. Maybe they'll sell both as the same car. I just hope they make a few of them because it's a really good plug-in. For what it does, you'll do all of your miles Monday to Friday, and probably all of your miles on electric if you charge at home overnight.
What's the all-electric range?
That size.
What's the all-electric range?
What is it? It would have tipped at 40, didn't it?
40 miles. Yeah, yeah, right, yeah, around. But this shows Toyota that there's really a demand. I think it's shocking them. They even came out with a release that's like, whoa, we sold out. So this
of course
is
they sold
thing.
Out. Of course yeah. they sold
well,
out.
Because they're not making any, I understand. But this might be what's been needed to get it into their heads that people want cars with plugs.
Right. And especially from brands that, you know, people really know and really, you know, have a lot of confidence in, you know, Toyota is like, you know, the top brand, really.
I'm not so sure that this surprised them, the demand. You know, this is a large, sophisticated company that does tons of market research. I think they knew all along. I think they knew how many they were going to make. They let the whole press and the media, you know, fawn over the vehicle when they announced it with the price and the range, and they got all that great PR out of it. And then they're like, okay, and a month later, we'll drop the hammer on them and tell them we're only making a couple of these. You know, it just fits so in line with how Tesla has just been so, Tesla, Toyota has been so anti-plug-in vehicle. This wasn't, look how many people want to buy. They knew, I mean, you know how contracts go with suppliers. They didn't just find out that they can't get enough batteries. You know, if that's even the reason, are they really supply constrained? As Martin mentioned, they're such a big manufacturer. They have so much leverage over, you know, suppliers that they could get more batteries. Now, maybe they couldn't get as many as Tesla makes now, but they could definitely get enough to sell, you know, a fairly significant number of these cars. They just don't want to sell them. Let's just put it out there. They don't want to sell these cars.
It's kind of crazy. But so one car that, I mean, they have to pick it up or they're going to lose, you know, what do you call that? First mover status. You know, you get to the market first, like Tesla, you sell the majority of the vehicles. If you like slow to market, you know, you're not going to, there's only so much, you know, cheese to go around. And so Ford is going to be one of their bigger competitors here because they have their Mach-E coming out. Is it by the end of the year or first, you know, right around that
by
time?
By the end of the year still.
And now it's getting a performance boost before it even launches. They just announced the extended all-wheel drive, extended range all-wheel drive version gets 14 more horses, 11 more torques. The extended range rear wheel drive, 8 horses, 11 torque. They all actually, I have the list of all the cars here, and they all get 11 more foot pound of torque. And, you know, it's ranging between 8 to 14 additional horsepower. And the standard range all wheel drive and the standard range rear wheel drive both get 11 more horses. I'm not sure how that translates into performance boost, but I imagine it's a little bit something.
Yeah, I don't think you'd really be able to feel it. But I think what Ford's doing, what we've seen is, you know, they've been pumping the PR on this car, sure. Not anything bad. You know, they invited us to that launch where we were able to drive it virtually. They've been putting out their own videos. They've been putting out like at least 2 press releases a week, it seems, recently. And I think it's all to build up the awareness before the vehicle comes on sale. Not anything out of the ordinary, but it's all good. And I think Ford took the right approach of, you know, under promising and now over delivering, at least on specs. And exactly. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense in their court.
remember that this announcement came on Monday, which was the suddenly finding 14 horsepower, like a set of car keys they'd misplaced, came on the day that the order books opened. It was no coincidence. They've been sitting on it for a while. No bad thing. It's their job to drum up interest. I'm just pointing out the happy coincidence.
Oh, thanks for mentioning that, Martin. I forgot. They also announced that if you reserve the car now is the time to convert that to a firm order. So yeah, get in touch with your dealer if you have a reservation in.
I'm going to talk about this for a half a second. Sorry.
Yeah, but I'll tell you. It's in there.
I have joined the Mach-E owners group on Facebook. Yeah. I know. Not that I'm having one, but I have seen extremely varied experiences with ordering Mustang Mach-E. Some are having a great experience with their dealer. They're on it. They know what to do. Other dealers haven't even signed up to accept online orders. So people have put in orders and they've just gone nowhere. I haven't heard back. There was one individual, I should have screenshotted it, but he has been on the phone with like head of their internet sales and like everything. He just wants his car and it's been very difficult. So I think this will be an interesting one to watch unfold as time goes to see if this is the correct approach to trying to go Tesla style, but still having to keep your dealers happy, because that's exactly what's going on here.
Yeah. It's
you got to understand that Ford has very little options there. They'd love to sell cars direct. So would all the manufacturers. I've talked to representatives from all the manufacturers in the U.S. Every manufacturer would love to go direct, but they can't. You know, they've got this dealer network. The laws are extremely tight. And what you're going to get is, like any private business, there's going to be a certain percentage of the dealerships that are fantastic, a certain percentage that are mediocre, and then there's a percentage of them that are just poorly run private enterprises. And I haven't seen the comments that you're talking about, Kyle, but I'm sure it's along those lines. That, you know, I'm intimately aware of this stuff. One of the things I do full time is work with dealerships and train them on how to better sell electric vehicles. And I've, you know, seen some dealerships that are just disasters, not just with electric vehicles. They're just terribly run dealerships. They're just poor business people. And then other dealerships that are like just on top of everything. And, you know, so, you know, it doesn't surprise me. You're going to get that. And, you know, until we figure out a way of having some type of an evolution in how we sell vehicles in the U.S., and it's going to need sweeping changes in the laws on how cars are sold. You know, we're going to get this. There's going to be a percentage that are terrible and a percentage that are good.
Yeah, it's the 4th of July weekend. It's a holiday here in the U.S. So I think we're going to cut it now. And that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to wish you all a very happy 4th of July. And a slightly belated Canadian Canada, happy Canada Day. So thank you all for joining us. And if you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section. Of course, we'll check that out. And on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread, where we collect all the episodes. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists here on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. Martin is at EV News Daily. Kyle is at Out of Spec. And I'm at Dominic _Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week.